Okay, so good afternoon. Just to let you know, we're a bit restricted for time today as I have an early flight to Auckland. So I'll probably be here for about half an hour, but we'll do our very best. Today I have Tertiary Skills and Employment Minister Stephen Joyce to join me to give an update on the results so far from our apprenticeship reboot subsidy, which I announced in January of this year. Also, early today, you will have seen that Stephen announced the government is making an interim investment in Team New Zealand of $5 million to retain key members while a decision is made on whether to enter the 35th America's Cup. So we'll run through the details of that apprenticeship update and take any questions on that and the government's interim investment in Team New Zealand. Then Stephen can leave and we can move on to other matters you'd like to discuss today. So in terms of the apprenticeship update, in January this year I announced the government would be boosting the number of New Zealand apprenticeships, including providing a $28 million subsidy for employers and workers to take on more apprentices. With the rebuilding of Christchurch and the housing construction boom in Auckland, there is a big opportunity over the next few years to train more New Zealanders in vocational careers that will set them up for their working lives while supporting economic growth in the country. Alongside the new nationwide New Zealand apprenticeships, which will open to all ages from 1 January next year, the reboot subsidy will help boost the number of apprentices in this country. Results so far are impressive. 8,000 new apprentices have signed up in just 7 months since the scheme came into effect, and interest has come from right across the country. This is an increase of 62% of people starting apprenticeships compared to the same period last year. What is also encouraging is that two-thirds of all apprentices who have signed up have been in the designated priority trades such as construction and infrastructure. This is a great achievement, and I'll hand over to Stephen to run through more details.
Thank you, Prime Minister. So under the $28 million reboot subsidy that started on the 6th of March this year, the first 10,000 new apprentices who sign up for training are eligible to receive $1,000 towards the cost of their tools and off-job course costs, or $2,000 for those in priority trades. Employers are also eligible for an equal payment. The 8,010 trainees who have signed up for the reboot subsidy and for apprenticeships by 10 October compares to the normal sign-up rate of around 7,000 for a full year. With the reboot and New Zealand apprenticeships, we had estimated that around 14,000 extra new apprentices, will start training over the next 5 years, over and above the 7,000 who enrol normally. We're currently running ahead of that at this point. The Tertiary Education Commission expects the 10,000th trainee will sign up for the reboot before the end of this calendar year. Because of the strong uptake of the reboot, the government is now investing more money into extending the number of places eligible for the subsidy. The apprenticeship reboot and the New Zealand apprenticeships are part of the government's move to a more results focus in industry training. That compares to the history of what we inherited. We had up to about 100,000 phantom trainees in courses who achieved no credits. Our apprenticeship changes are making a significant contribution towards meeting the Better Public Services target of 55% of 25 to 34-year-olds with at least a Level 4 qualification, because the apprenticeships involved are all at Level 4. It is also helping more young people gain the skills they and our country need to take up the opportunities, particularly with the construction industry growth, but also in other industries right across the country. And the paper that's been distributed has a list of apprentices by region. So happy to take any questions on that and also on the America's Cup.
How many extra apprentices do you think the extension could see created?
It's a little hard to say at this point. I mean, obviously there's budgetary considerations around shaking the tin at the TEC, and so far I haven't quite got the numbers that we'll be able to do, but certainly we're keen to take up the opportunities we can, because what we are seeing is significant growth in a number of industries, and it's important to keep those skills coming through, and there's a real interest, particularly in the building industry at this point, to hire more apprentices.
Is it enough, given the Reserve Bank has signalled that you may need imported labour to help with the construction booms in Christchurch?
Well, we're always going to need and get some imported labour. That's the reality of the movements in the construction industry. So the growth in the construction industry comes from about four areas. Firstly, construction industry is one where people tend to move away from it in tougher times and then move back. Secondly, you've really got an Australasian job market now, and we know we lost a lot of tradespeople when Australia was having their resources boom. As you can see from the latest statistics released today on immigration, that's really turning the other way now, and we're seeing quite a few people coming back across the Tasman, and that will help augment it. Thirdly, you have the training element to it, and that's what we've been talking about today. And then fourthly, of course, you will see some coming from offshore as well. So it's a combination of all four of those things.
The Team New Zealand funding, is that more or less than Team New Zealand indicated they might need?
A little bit less than they indicated they might need at this stage. But they have agreed to go off and see if they can find the balance elsewhere. With the balance was around developing some of the technologies they wanted to at this stage, and we said that's fine, that's great. See if you can find some other sponsorship for that. We think $5 million is about right for our contribution at this point.
In terms of Grant Dalton, is that conditional on him staying on the team to help run it or not?
No, there's no conditions at this point. I think I've had advice from both Grant and Dean Barker directly that that's their intention, is to stay on and be part of the team. Although they've also been very clear, both of them actually, that that they shouldn't have their positions as of right, and that should always be tested over the next 3 or 4 years. But my understanding is that they both intend to stay part of the team. The $5 million will help keep some key people, and then they are in the process of building up a challenge approach, which they hope to finalise by about April, May of next year.
What would you say to those who might question why you're putting $5 million into a yacht race, and at the same time you've got industries in Shannon and Sawmill and Rotorua going down the Googler and jobs being lost in those regions?
I think it's really important that we understand why we do this. We're not just interested in putting $5 million into the yacht race. The real benefit out of this is the exposure it gives New Zealand and its exporters in the largest economy in the world, which is the USA. And I think we can all agree, partly as a result of the result not being quite what we intended, that the level of exposure, the level of visibility of New Zealand in that market was greatly enhanced over the period of the regatta. And there's been direct benefit from that for our ICT industry, our food and beverage industry, our technology industries like the marine industry and so on, who have obtained real profile and benefit out of that, as New Zealand as a whole. So that's the reason you do this sort of thing. In terms of the particular companies that you raise, my understanding is that both of them have issues that are related to their industry. And the reality is that the jobs are created and lost in the New Zealand economy every year. It's tough for the individuals involved. But in terms of lifting New Zealand's profile on the world stage and helping us grow our exports, that's important for every export-based business.
How much did it on the world stage, though? Because, I mean, in the States, yachting and the America's Cup was a minority sport, and certainly didn't get anywhere near the coverage it got here.
Well, ironically, partly because of the way the regatta unfolded, it got much broader coverage. For example, the price you put and the value you put on a colour photo on the front page of the New York Times, level of coverage in the Wall Street Journal. The last day that I was there, the morning of the San Francisco Chronicle had not just one, but four stories, the front page, the middle of the front news section, the front of the sports section, and so on. And that was going on for a significant period of time. San Francisco itself was a huge beachhead for New Zealand businesses into the USA by virtue of Silicon Valley, the Kiwi landing pad, our food and beverage arrangements up there with wine and so on. So I think you'd have to say that Northern California alone is pretty important. California is important, and then the benefit, admittedly in a lower level compared to California across the rest of the country, is very beneficial for New Zealand. And there's not many things that have moved the dial. I've had Hobbit movies, Prime Minister, in that way, in that market for New Zealand over the last 3 or 4 years. And so on that basis, you have to properly assess each time, is this the thing that you want to put your investment in? And we think on the strength of the outcome in terms of exposure for this country, it's certainly worth looking seriously at again, and we're prepared to put the $5 million up in the meantime to give the opportunity to see if we can support the team in putting a challenge together.
What happens if they don't put a challenge together? What is the $5 million?
$5 million is basically is a cost to us. It's not money that we'd be able to get back, Patty. The reality is that's a speculative part of the investment. If they succeed in a challenge, then of course it would form part of the subsequent sponsorship. I know that we've been here before. We've seen these things in the past. The previous government actually put up $10 million in 2007 We've been able to tie that down to 5 this time, but nevertheless, you get to that point where you either provide a little bit of support to get the team underway again, or alternatively, you lose that opportunity.
Did the government look into ways of getting out of the vape government contract when you boosted power?
Yes, we did. And that was part of our response to the global financial crisis, which, as you will recall, we were trying to stop every bit of expenditure that wasn't nailed down to focus on the areas that that we were worried about. I think at that time...
If you had been able to get out of it, would you have got out of it at that point?
Well, I wasn't the minister at the time. It's something as a government we would have looked at, but it didn't actually come to pass because ultimately it wasn't
pretty
something
pretty,
that we could move.
Pretty lucky, isn't it?
Well, it's worked out okay for everybody. It's worked out okay for New Zealand, which is really important, because I think even prior to the regatta, there was quite a lot of people saying, oh, this isn't worth the investment. But actually, a lot more post the regatta have said, surprising just how high a profile New Zealand got as a result of that competition. And on that basis, I think we've all reassessed a little bit.
What sort of message does it send, though? Because some industries, you're picking winners, aren't you? And some industries are clearly losing.
I don't think that's right in this instance, because it's not about a single industry. I know the marine industry would say it's very important for them, and that's great, but it's actually about a whole range of industries. What does it say about New Zealand on the world stage? It says that we're innovative, that we're high technology, great design, great engineers. That's about the whole New Zealand industry. That's not just about a particular part of it, so that's why it's very important.
How many people are short of what Team New Zealand wants to have?
Well, they were seeking about $6.5 million at this stage, and we've made it 5.
Are there any strings attached to the $5 million?
Well, obviously we've got to spend on the things that we've agreed, but beyond that...
Do you have any say or right of veto over, say, a sponsor you don't like?
Well, no, because the next stage of it would be them coming and saying, here's the plan, here's the America's Cup arrangements, here's where it's being held, here's what sort of yachts it is, here's the other sponsors we've been able to assemble. Are you keen to go ahead or not? And that's our opportunity to assess what we would want to do at that point.
So what happens with this lack of a right of veto if, for argument's sake, Kim.com?
Well, I mean, I...
Yeah, or someone along the...
Well, we haven't sort of right of veto as such. My humble view of dear old Kim is that if he wants to get on into the America's Cup, he should pop up to San Francisco and lay his challenge on the table. I'm sure they'd like to see him.
How many people will this money go to, and what do you expect them to spend it on? Is it to help with development at this stage, or is it so they can just keep chilling out on the boat until the re-quarter?
It's firstly to help retain some of their key people. So you've got a whole lot of other challenges that are sniffing around now. They want the designers, they want the top yachts, they want the top support crew and all those sort of things. So this will help them to continue on with those people and hold them for a period of time. We'll also help them begin the preparations for another campaign, including, of course, the sponsorships, the liaison with the people that, with Larry Ellison's crew and the America's Cup defenders and setting up the protocol. We'll also help them start to develop their design aspirations in terms of what they wanted to do. The reality is they can't sit still until the middle of next year. They need to act a bit as if they're already underway so they don't lose ground and suddenly turn up and everybody else is 6 months ahead of them. So that's their challenge. My view of it is that this is the sort of thing that they are probably up for.
How many people will you mean that are keen?
I don't have those numbers with me today, but I'll make some for us.
How much extra do you think the government might have to put in if it gets to the next stage?
Well, it's all subject to the number of sponsorships. I've signalled to them that the sort of money we would be interested in would be no more than the 30, there was 36 million last time, so in the 30 to 40 million range, that would be about where the government sits. But I have to stress that I haven't been to cabinet with those numbers yet, so the Prime Minister might have a different view. But I think we wanted to signal pretty clearly for them that it would be on a similar basis, on a 1-for-2 basis, and so as they didn't think entirely different numbers to what had been there in the past.
So that's 30 to 40 on top of the 5?
No, it would be, no, the 5 is included in that 5.
So will we see some kind of cost-benefit analysis from NZT or MB, some figures?
What we will see is a review evaluation of the most recent one, which will help to inform the decision as to whether we proceed with another big sponsorship support. also an assessment based on where that's being held, for example, whether it continues to be at San Francisco or wherever, and those sorts of questions. So there'll be an estimate, yes. But again, I would stress that some of the stuff is quite speculative, so you do your best and then you have to make a judgment.
And will that be released publicly?
That would be the intention.
And could more of that money be contributed before Team New Zealand decides to challenge? Would there be more money that could
be? No, $5 would be the maximum until such time as they've made a final decision to challenge and we've made an assessment as to whether we want to support them.
What's the time frame for that decision? Or?
Well, realistically, they're unlikely to know the way in which the next cup is run until end of first quarter next year. So we're talking sometime between March and May, I suspect.
And are you concerned that there was some brand confusion this time around, and that the BBC World, for instance, at one stage is referring to the New Zealand team as Emirates, the Emirates boat?
It's one of the things that we're looking at, is whether we've got sufficient branding for our investment, and that's definitely one of the things that we'd want to assess, along some other things. So yeah, we'd be looking for improvements as part of any investment as well, as I'm sure every other sponsor would. So if it came to that, we'd probably have to fight over bits of the boat.
So would that involve giving Air New Zealand a bit of a nudge to...
Oh, we're not going to get into that. That's between Team New Zealand and their sponsors.
That's Meridian, given wind power.
Well, you just never know your luck in the big city, Claire.
Okay, on a happy note, we'll move on to other matters and situations across the ditch in Australia. As you'll be aware, a state of emergency has been called across New South Wales in Australia due to the worsening situation with the bushfires. Authorities there are describing this as the worst fire crisis in New South Wales in 45 years. Earlier this afternoon, I rang New South Wales Premier Barry O'Farrell to get an update on the situation and to reiterate that New Zealand remains ready to assist if requested. There are standing arrangements in place whereby state governments in Australia can ask New Zealand for assistance to fight bushfires. Mr O'Farrell thanked me for the call and said the situation was serious, with a forecast for high temperatures, low humidity and high winds over the next few days. It would be a challenging week. He said he was aware of the capabilities available from New Zealand, including from our assistance around the bushfires in January this year, would not hesitate to call for help if it was needed. And I got the impression it was likely that we would send people at some stage. In terms of the House this week, the government will look to progress the Telecommunications Interception Capability Act Amendment Bill, the Members of Parliament Remuneration and Services Bill, and the Health and Safety Pipe Implementation Bill. Wednesday is a Members' Day. Just in terms of my own activities this week, I'm in Wellington tomorrow and Wednesday for the usual caucus and House activities. On Thursday, I'll be in Central Otago for a range of events, and on Friday, I'll be in Auckland for mainly private events. Questions?
What would that assistance to New South Wales look like? How many people?
Don't know at this stage. I mean, the conversation I have with him, he is obviously assessing the current situation, which is clearly serious. I think New Zealand firefighters had participated on a conference call that had taken place this morning, and certainly the early indications I got was likely that some of that specialist technology and people that we have would be deployed across the Tasman, but it's early days yet.
We've got a couple of examples in the last couple of days of regional businesses really struggling. Are you concerned that this is a trend and that what's your message to those who are losing their jobs?
Well, firstly, I think my top level understanding of both of those businesses is that the issues are specific to them. I don't think they're any part of any great regional trend. So the sawmill in Rotorua, there's something specific happening there. And in fact, the general advice I've had is that they're looking to sell that business potentially as a going concern. So we would hope that those employees, or as many as possible, would be able to move over to the new buyer, assuming there is one. In terms of the situation in Shannon, that's a situation brought about because their resource consent's running out in the next couple of years. They're actually moving the business up to another region, so it's a situation where it's going from one part of the country to another part of the country in probability. I accept it's always very difficult for people when they lose their job, but overall, if you look at the census and you look at the growth numbers around the country, they've actually been pretty strong. 15 of the 16 regions around New Zealand have population growth. Many of them have regional economic growth rate, which is actually higher than Auckland's. We've been looking at our per capita government spend around the country, and it's pretty even everywhere. We are rolling out some significant initiatives that will help the regions, particularly things like ultra-fast broadband. So I mean, overall, there's a lot to be optimistic about. If you look at the Reserve Bank and Treasury forecasts and the tax all of those look very impressive to me. So, you know, I think generally people can feel a lot more chipper about the economy than they would have 5 years ago.
The unions are saying that there are imports of milled timber from Chile and Canada into their Christchurch rebuild. Does this make sense to have to be importing timber but shutting down sawmills?
Well, I don't have all of those details. Like I said, that sawmill, there's a specific issue there, and they're looking for a buyer, so that mill isn't necessarily shutting down. Secondly, actually, we've been doing pretty well in terms of exports of both logs and processed timber. But one of the big things we can do is get completion of some of these free trade agreements. Like, for instance, Korea is a big market from New Zealand's perspective for wood, but the lack of an FTA means that there are quite heavy restrictions going into the Korean market. So again, if we could resolve those issues, we'd be in good shape. But if you think about what we know, there's going to be almost certainly a construction boom, both in the retail sector and, residential sector and the commercial sector in the next few years, and that's certainly seen big demand for timber.
Are you worried about these migration numbers showing, you know, back towards 20,000 net a year, putting quite a bit of pressure on the housing market, and I guess in particular Auckland?
Well, there's two things. Firstly, it's probably a sign of success that the migration numbers are positive. It means the less people are going across the ditch to try and find opportunities. There's more and increasing confidence in the New Zealand economy. And actually, we see the unemployment rate falling. I mean, a lot of the predictions we see from Treasury, Reserve Bank and others is that unemployment will likely have a 5 in front of it in the foreseeable future. So, yes, it puts some pressure on the housing market, but you know, the government has demonstrated how serious it is about supply. We have these special housing areas in Auckland, and in fact, my understanding is we are tracking literally week by week the consents coming out of the Auckland Council. They have been running at just the same rate, in fact, an increasing rate, post the LBR restrictions as they were prior to it. So the argument that there'll be less houses built, you know, 3 weeks into it isn't demonstrating anything.
But isn't the worry that this is just going to put further pressure on the Reserve Bank and cancel out any of the gains that might have been made by the LBRs in terms of interest rate rises?
Yeah, look, you can always see, so it depends whether you believe the glass is half full or it's half empty. I'm in the, you know, kind of half full category, which says some people coming in will have skills that we can bring to help speed up the process. They'll be specialists in certain areas. Secondly, it's a positive sign that the New Zealand economy is growing and New Zealand is a place to want to live. We just need to continue to work on those supply issues, and consenting 39,000 new homes over a 3-year period, as opposed to our previous run rate in the last 3 years, which had been about 12,000, is a clear demonstration. And if other political parties want to help us in that process, well, they'll continue to support us with things like RMA reform.
The latest
Ministry for Environment report has them projecting greater emissions by 2040 than they did last year. Kennedy Graham says that's largely a result of changes to the ETS. Do you have any concerns about that?
No, I don't think that's right. There's a number of different factors. I think a lot of the part of the issue is because some of the 1990 forests were milled, and so they're distorting the figures slightly. But look, overall, I think if you look at what New Zealand is doing, we're on the right track. What is certainly true is that emissions trading schemes around the world and the price of carbon have collapsed because economic activity prior to this was going to be pretty low. But I think the government's tracking broadly the right path. We're certainly sticking to our goal. We've got both 2020 targets and a 50-year target we're addressing.
But that longer-term target, according to the Minister for Environment, shot right up.
Like I say, partly as I understand, because of some of the distortions in the numbers.
But if you were to meet that 2050 target, you're going to have a sudden contraction about 2040, which could be catastrophic.
Yeah, I think you've got to be a bit careful about here in sort of 2013, putting too much credence into what's going to happen in 27 years from now when it comes to climate change, because the reality is that half of all of our emissions come from nitrate and methane emissions from agriculture. The Global Greenhouse Gas Alliance is working on technological solutions, and actually that could be quite binary. In other words, it's quite possible we come up with a scientific solution that sees a dramatic reduction in those emissions. It's not going to be necessarily a kind of slow linear reduction. So actually I'm of the view that science is going to be our friend when it comes to this area.
So it might deliver a silver bullet here.
Well, I've never been of the view that people are going to dramatically change their lifestyle. They're not going to stop eating protein. They're not going to stop wanting New Zealand to produce that protein. But science can actually assist us. And we're seeing that already in terms of both science and innovation, because most people are driving much more fuel-efficient cars than they ever did 3 or 4 years ago. And in fact, that's causing the government another problem, which is we collect now far less in terms of road taxes than we otherwise would for the same number of kilometres being driven.
What are your initial impressions of New Zealand Post's Ken Funds and
Look, I just don't think that's the right approach to take for KiwiSaver. There's $16 billion of New Zealand's money currently invested in KiwiSaver. It's good that there's competition amongst those providers. Winston Peters is saying get rid of 20 different providers and put all your eggs in one basket. Well, that's a risky strategy. Those 20 different providers have different investment strategies. They take different risk profiles. They compete for fees. And we'd be literally saying we're going to bet the whole house on one provider. And as we've seen in the financial markets, that can be quite a risky strategy. So I don't think it's the right approach myself.
What about setting up Kiwi Fund as a provider that would then be in competition with those other providers?
Yeah, I mean, that's always possible. Whether its fees would be dramatically lower, whether it would be interested in doing that, I don't know. But there's, you know, in principle, no reason why New Zealand Super Fund or ACC could theoretically be a provider. But whether it would be dramatically cheaper than the others, I'm not so sure.
That is what Mr. Peters is talking about. He is talking about maintaining the private providers in competition with Kiwi Fund. But he's also talking about a government guarantee for Kiwi Fund. Would that be a problem?
Yeah, that would be a massive problem. Because, you know, so we're going to say that one provider is going to be government guaranteed and everybody else is not.
Would you rule that out?
Well, if the guarantee is, depending on what the guarantee is, but if it's capital protection, for instance, it's basically saying that to that group there is only upside potential and no downside risk. And as we know with the financial markets, that's never a strategy a smart government will underwrite, because there are times where the markets go up and down.
So you can rule out supporting something like that with the government guarantee?
Well, look, I saw Mr. Peter's comments yesterday, and let's be honest. You know, you guys have spent your careers trying to analyse what he says, and you've got more sense out of kind of the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. I mean, he talks in riddles. He doesn't stick to what he says. It's a waste of time having a discussion that this is a bottom line. There are no bottom lines when it comes to Winston Peters. He'll do a deal with who he feels like doing with come the election if he's in government. But saying this is a bottom line, and he'll stick to it, it won't be a bottom line the way you write it.
So would you rather work with Colin Craig?
Might do. Let's wait and see. I mean, we haven't made any decisions. As I said to you, next year we'll give you a bit of a clear steer of where we're going. I'm just simply saying that in the 2005 election, Mr. Peters said he didn't want the baubles of office and he wasn't going to office, and lo and behold, a few months later, he did. He's quite often said things are, you know, either a bottom line or they're the negotiating position, and actually they all change. And actually, fundamentally, within MMP, parties are required to do that. I'm not knocking that, but I'm just saying it's ridiculous if we're all going to sit around and say we've got all these bottom lines, because they won't be bottom lines when people come to the negotiations. Lo and behold, party leaders will find a way through it.
Do you have a preference between the Conservatives and New Zealand First?
Well, I'll tell you next year.
So Prime Minister, we understand that. Does Peter Dunne have any chance of getting ministerial post back in this term?
Sorry?
Does Peter Dunne have any chance of getting ministerial post back in this term?
Yeah, he has a chance of getting back this term.
What does he have to do for that to happen?
Well, I haven't turned my mind to it, but I said at the time I wasn't ruling that out. And, you know, there's the Privileges Committee, which is going to report back, and that's reporting back on a slightly different issue, but we'll need to see that. Let's see how things go.
Does he have any chance of being High Commissioner to Canberra?
He hasn't asked for that job, and yeah, I don't think that's really where his mind's at.
We understand MPs' pay is going to be in front of the House this week. Do you think your MPs deserve a pay rise?
Well, I've just written back to the Remuneration Authority this afternoon.
What was your recommendation to them?
Well, it's probably good manners that she receives the letter before I say it, but bluntly, I'm not in favour of big pay increases for MPs.
But small pay increases?
If it was my vote, it would be no pay increases, but I don't get that vote. I think there's an argument around, you know, like very low adjustments, but I don't buy the argument that they're out of whack with the rest of the private sector or the public sector, and they need big pay increases. They're independent and they're free to take their own views. They're just consulting with me as they consult with others.
So they did present an option to you, you in effect rejected today.
Well, they wrote to me.
Did they indicate where they were going?
They always consult at a high level and say what they think.
we understand this year it's going to be discussed in the light of day rather than the dead of night. Anything behind that?
Well, I hope they do. I mean, it's they are completely independent. They make the decisions. They have to, I think, either legally are required to actually consult, and they do consult. But typically, they announce it a week after Parliament's broken up and a week before Christmas. Typically, I get bagged for the decision that they make, and it's nothing to do with me. I'm happy to express my views, but they are truly and totally independent. So if they want to do it earlier and, you know, in the full light of day, I'll continue to make the same comments I make, and I hope you guys will report that they are independent and free to make their own decisions.
Is that part of your submission, to it in the time further from Christmas?
No, it wasn't.
But the debate, though, will be during the day. I mean, in terms of them in Parliament. So why is that? Why are you guys...
I don't know. I mean, that's matter for them.
And are we talking about an increase around the rate of inflation? Is that what's acceptable to you?
Yeah, that would be the top end, yeah.
I think Jess is talking about the remuneration bill.
You're talking about the REM bill. Yeah, that's different. That's a completely different matter for the REM authority. The REM bill's going through because we gave commitments that we would give greater transparency in those areas and also change in authority. And essentially what it means is for certain aspects of travel, spousal travel and the likes, that authority will move from being something that's decided by the Speaker of Parliamentary Services to independent authority. With the one change that was fully and unanimously supported by the overall committee, and that was to keep parliamentarians' travel continue to be administered by the Speaker.
Just going back to Colin Craig, do you accept that you could alienate some of your own supporters if you were to form some kind of arrangement with a fundamentally Christian organisation, particularly among women voters and liberals, medical trade voters?
Yes, so any political party that we join forces with, if that's required to put together a government, we'll have positives and minuses. So, yeah, at the end of the day, if we do another deal with ACT and they're back in Parliament, people will say they're quite right-wing. If we do a deal with United Future, people will say, well, something's up. Then they don't like the Maori Party, some things they don't like. Colin Craig wins and peace, it's all the same. And there are always pluses and minuses. In the end, all I know is that MMP is a coalition-driven system. So Germany's had one time in its history where it's had a majority government. We've never managed to achieve that. Angela Merkel's effectively almost going to get an outright majority of 42.5%, but still needs to form a coalition, and actually it looks like it's a green coalition with effectively the Labour Party in Germany. So, I don't create the system. I gave people a chance to express their view on it in 2011. They expressed their view that they wanted to keep it on that basis. I don't do what any other political leader does, and that is do my best to ensure there's a National League government from 2014, supported by as many parties that would give us a parliamentary majority. I'm sure David Cumberland will do the same for Labour.
What's your view of elements of the National Party getting dragged into the Landbrook scandal?
Well, I don't think it's true to say that the National Party's involved. We're not involved in local government. We're not part of CNR. There may be people that associated with it who are also members of the National Party, but that's also like saying they may also be part of the Catholic Church. I mean, that's just other things that they do.
How would you feel if members of your staff or your cabinet were communicating regularly with Cameron's leaders' talk?
Well, there will be people that talk to him, just like there will be people that talk to all sorts of other people out there. I can't and don't control who they speak to. It's for them to decide that. Well, I'm not going to go to my MPs and say you can talk to this person, you can't talk to another. I think they're not the star on the state. So at the end of the day, they're free to make their own decisions. What I can tell you is the National Party, as a political party, is not behind this. The first I knew about was literally when someone said to me, they'll look at this block site in the house last week.
You said your MPs, but what about members of your staff and your cabinet?
Well, I mean, again, I'm not involved in I have no knowledge of that, so
do you think the climate's changed now since this Brown explosion?
I don't know. I don't think it's the whole thing that's happened will be welcomed actually by anybody. It's some people have a range of different views, but fundamentally in Parliament, my view's always been that we want to attract people into Parliament, and actually very few people have led a life of blameless excellence. I mean, most people will have something they've done prior to coming into Parliament that they're ashamed of, or at least they're not happy with, or they wish they could have done differently. And we don't want to deter people from coming in because we think that they've got to meet the standard that very, very few people meet. That might be different later on. It's for other people to judge what they do in either in local government or parliament.
Do you have something that you're ashamed of?
I don't really.
Not really?
That's something that I'm terribly worried about, no.
Are you worried that one of your MPs could be next?
Well, there's always risks. I mean, there's 121 people in Parliament, and like I said, I don't know all the things they get up to or don't get up to, but over the years, I've had plenty of people that bring me up with information about later MPs, and I've done the same thing to every person that's rung me. I've written it down, put it in my top drawer, and kept it to myself. Just not interested in engaging.
Have you given any of your MPs a warning that this is what could happen now?
Well, we haven't had a caucus meeting since things came out on Tuesday afternoon. But I've regularly given them a warning that they are in the public spotlight, not because of necessarily what's gone on in Auckland, but just generally in terms of the way they carry themselves out, the way they treat other members of the public. I mean, there's a higher expectation on MPs than there is on others, and rightfully so. I expect my MPs to treat people well, politely, civility, and decent manners.
And would you be giving them another warning?
I don't think I really need to. But,
yeah. Can we OIA your top drawer?
You can't OIA my top drawer, but I wonder if I write a book, you'll find it quite fascinating. It's amazing who rings up. Must go. Time's money.